Isabella Stefanescu speaking. He's a visual and media artist. He studied math and fine arts, in fact, at the University of Waterloo, and is the founder of the Vogue Studios and the contemporary art forum Kickstern Area. He has won Ontario Arts Council K.M. Hunter Award for Interdisciplinary Art. And today she's going to talk to us about kind of that interdisciplinary art called the Fauna Pen Project, where she's the artistic director. So, go on.
Daniel, thank you all for coming today. Just wanted to tell you that we have a lot of equipment on the electrical circuits here. And occasionally that's a lot of fun. I hope it won't disturb our presentation too much, but you might hear the computer wrong. So when I thought, I had a hard time thinking about this talk, partially because I didn't really have to grab with it. Talk about drawing, or was it a talk about music? And I come from a background, I'm essentially a painter, kind of a visual media artist, kind of fitness medium, but I do, I paint. And everything I do comes from that kind of area of drawing, drawing with color, black and white, drawing on paper, drawing on canvas, drawing on tablets. So I thought that what I would do today with this presentation, which is called Scribble Scrabble, perhaps some of you might actually recognize this as a quotation, I thought I would start with a drawing.
Can you put the microphone on, please?
Oh, yes. Okay. Currently, they're recording all these talks, so I want to catch my voice. And I will put on the microphone. Well, some more people to talk about. Okay, so here's the drawing. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, my computer has just quit. Or one of them. Anyway, so scribble, scribble, scribble. And that's what I wanted to show you, is the connection between making a mark and listening to the mark. And it's something that came out of my own practice, but also very much from teaching. I can hear how somebody draws by listening to that person. I don't have to see. I know what they're doing just by listening. But it was this idea that drawings is all kinds of things. And yes, this is one kind of drawing. And it came out of something like this. Something is boring after 2 minutes, John Cage says. Try it for 4. If it's still boring, then try it for 8. Mm-hmm. Then 16, then 32. Meaning that you can go on until it's not boring anymore. So it is this kind of trance that I get in drawing, and perhaps you got while listening, except for the little hiccups from the computer. But it is something that's really kind of interesting that happens here when we actually kind of listen and watch marks. And at some point, it seems to like that page. So at some point, Klaus, could you help me again? Yes. It's something that a lot of us do who are drawers just to get started. Perhaps some of you do too. As a matter of fact, I know for sure that somebody from your kind of field did that. It's a quote from Giancarlo Rota in Book of Memoirs. So he writes about the logician, the mathematician logician, Alonzo Church. And he said, every lecture began with a 10-minute ceremony of erasing the blackboard until it was absolutely spotless, right? So I could go back here, maybe. Can I? And yes. Okay. And I could start erasing in the inverse kind of process that you just saw. Perhaps I will. Perhaps for a few minutes anyway.
Thank you.
And so on. And presumably I could go until the page is all blank, right? So drawings. We have all sorts of drawings. So what is a drawing, right? Basically, it's making marks with an instrument on a surface. So it's sometimes putting marks on, sometimes taking marks off. And the instrument is totally optional, because we can actually draw with our hands, with our feet, with our whole body. And in the scribble, there's all sorts of drawings. There's blueprints, there's diagrams, maps, flowcharts, landscapes, portraits, nudes, interiors, graffiti, rubbings, tracings, writing, signatures, illustrations, coloring. It's interesting that if you think about the coloring, the way I started the talk here is that's what we do with kids. We want to count them down. What we do is we give them crayons, and they go through that mark making, which seems to have some kind of way of actually settling them down. So it's an interesting process. It's scribble. The question is, why do we still do it? Especially this business of drawing something that we see. Why don't we just point our phone to it and just click, right? So what is the motivation behind that? So for me, the story starts someplace here. This is actually a drawing I did in the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. And I'm somebody who goes to museums because I like to look at pictures. And the way I look at pictures is I take my sweet time. And as I look, I see a lot of people come and do this particular thing. They go up to the picture and look at it for intensely for 3 seconds. And then they spend about 30, 40, 1 minute reading the label. They glance more at the picture and move to the next one. So what I do in order to actually spend time with a picture, I actually draw. And it's a way for me to actually spend time looking at something and really focusing their attention. So this particular project, the Euphorum Pen, started here. Because when I started drawing, started happening is that people would gather behind me and they would spend time at my drawing and looking at the picture. So they themselves started to actually invest some time and attention in what we were looking at. So I realized then that there's something like looking at pictures and the way I look intently, because it's my trade, and I'm trying to figure out what went on first, what it's about, all this sort of stuff. And there's another part, which is the making of a drawing, the making of a picture, which in itself is as interesting, if perhaps not more interesting than actually the finished thing. And again, a quote from John Cage, he said, a finished work is exactly that. It requires resurrection. So what could he have meant by that, that a work requires resurrection? It's something really quite puzzling. Now, for a musician, yes, a work, finished work is, here, you've got your score, it's a finished work. And resurrection means you have to perform it, right? You actually, what you have to do is to re-embody it. So if you look at something like this, you immediately have some kind of reaction about your own body. You immediately know what this is, right? We all have hands. And this happens to be a prehistoric drawing. And all of us do actually understand the movement that went into making this particular drawing. What we also know is that this person was probably left-handed. Or at least, if he wasn't left-handed, or she wasn't left-handed, then the drawing was made with the left hand. It looks more like the left hand rather than the right, the other way around, right? And when we look at this picture, we know exactly how this was made. It's putting the hand in the pigment and putting it on the wall. And what's very, very interesting in looking at this particular drawing is that we actually feel what a wall felt like, right? You immediately know that this was a rough stone, and you can actually kind of, you're kind of there. You feel it with your own hand. So this kind of re-embodiment is something that any kind of performance actually draws on, and especially drawing performance. There is a scientific name for this kind of resurrection. It's called the kinesic resonance. It's something that we have in our bodies that not only when we see movement happen, we actually resonate, we know what it feels in our own bodies, but even if we read a work of literature and somebody describes a body movement or gestures the character, we see we actually are able to understand in an embodied fashion what goes on. It was this kinesic resonance that was kind of behind this whole project, trying to basically take people on a certain kind of trip as I was performing the drawing. Now, if you look at the finished drawing, there's a lot of things we can see, if we can see them. When John Cage said about a work of art being finished, for that work, time has ended. What it does at that point, unless it's re-embodied, unless it's resurrected, it starts decaying. And in drawing, that's particularly true. If you go to a museum and look at drawings, the drawings are exhibited in light somewhat like this, because there's all the light damages drawings, so they're really hard to see. And as you trying to decipher them. You see the layers of marks that somebody made, the locations of the marks, the pressure of the instrument or the hand or whatever they used to make the marks. You see the shape, the curvatures, straight lines, bending lines, curvy lines, how long the lines are. You might be able to see how the mark started and how the mark ended and make some guesses about how fast the mark was made, and then how the mark was finished. Whether it was a nice kind of uplift, it was a sudden finish, those kind of things. But those last three are kind of guesses. You can see them, but you're also guessing. You can see all those things in a performance, but for sure you can see the order of the marks, which you only guessing when you see a finished drawing. What you definitely don't see in a finished drawing are the pauses between the marks, right? Mm-hmm. And again, the entry, attack, the speed, deposits within the mark. Deposits within the mark are especially important if you're actually kind of changing direction, if you're actually letting ink bleed. Those things are really, really kind of important, but you actually see them happen when a drawing is performed. The variations in speed, the exit, might see some hesitation, and what you do is you hear sound. Now, in a drawing performance, I thought of doing drawings and having them projected, and if I draw without a contact mic, you wouldn't be hearing very much. And I thought that the sound was rather important because, in fact, we don't look at anything, we don't listen to anything without actually our whole senses. Perhaps that's what art makes art. It's even the smell of the paint, the smell of the ink, smell of sharpened pencils, those are things that are important, but the combination of sound and mark is really very, very important. And I think makes for a performance that's comprehensible. I lost my visuals again. So in a drawing performance, the sound is incidental. That means another term is aleatory. It's something that happens along with the drawing. It's not something that that is its primary language, the way it is for music, right? Music is all about the expressiveness of language. Drawing is about the expressiveness of the marks with the sound coming to help it along. The sound, it is a means of guiding attention. As I drew in the first drawing, sometimes you wouldn't know whether I was doing anything except by the sound. And finally, it's this kind of synesthetic experience where you experience everything with all your senses. And then there's a question of what does a drawing sound like? Well, depends what you draw with, and depends what you draw on. And depends if it's mic'd and all these sorts of things. But I was at this point, I was really considering what is the connection between drawing and music. And there was an answer, and the answer is given by this film, this wonderful film. It does usually have sound, but we seem to have lost it, right? Okay, it's a film that was made in 1956 by Henri Georges Clouzot, who is also the director who made a film called The Wages of Fear, if any one of you has seen it, where a bunch of drivers drive tracks of nitroglycerin down the side of a mountain. And he was also a painter, and he found as much excitement in actually filming Picasso make drawings, and he put that in this particular film. What's interesting about this particular film is that it is somewhat like watching paint dry. It's not a lot of variety. What happens is Picasso draws, right? And the matter of sound, yes, at first they put the drawings were done with markers on a translucent canvas. And it had very much the sound that I had at the beginning, the kind of markers sound, including the kind of whistling that markers make. But at some point, music was added. And the music was actually sort of connected to the theme of the drawings. It was composed afterwards, and was used somewhat as a graphic score. And it was used also to give a sort of meaning to the drawings. And Picasso, being Spanish, the composer French, but the music had this kind of Spanish inflection that a number of French composers were so fascinated by, which is people like Bizet and Lalo, and Georges Auriac put that in this particular film. I think it's perhaps one of the best films about drawing anytime, so if you have the opportunity to see it, please do. I think you'll have a great time. Now, what I thought is that actually composing music for drawing like this was fine, but it was not exactly what I was interested in, because it's already one time removed. I was very much interested about all the light performance, where you actually see the drawing happen in front of you, and the kind of risk that somebody takes by actually doing something in front of you. There's a lot of teachers who never demonstrate drawing, because a drawing can go wrong. They feel rather exposed. But I feel that, in fact, a drawing that goes wrong is still wrong. There's no such thing as a wrong drawing, you know. It's what somebody saw and expressed in that moment, and what the marks they put down is what they actually see. For me, it's very interesting in teaching sometimes. I'll come and make a correction, and usually, in life drawing, somebody has made a line, has made a limb look very thin, and I point out that they had been drawing, they thought they were drawing the outside contour, but what they actually had been drawing is the point where the shadow meets the light. They had not realized it. The hand and I were working with bypassing the conscious brain, and that's what was happening. So in fact, what they had drawn was very valid, and the correction was so much more interesting for them because they actually saw that their body had gotten the right thing. It's just their mind hadn't figured it out. So this business about doing a drawing live for me was very, very important. And this seems to be the continuum of this. Any kind of live performance can go wrong, just like here, right? So you always take a risk, and you always have to mitigate. So the Euphonopent, for me, was an instrument generated to manipulate sound for a drawing performance. Now, there had been, in fact, what it is a mapping of a graphic mark to sound. Now, if you think of music, one definition of music is the evolution of sound in time, and drawing is the evolution of marking time. So there are some precedents for this. One of the famous precedents is a machine that Yannis Xenakis, a composer of Greek origin, made in 1977. It was a computer kind of machine where he actually introduced marks that would create sound. So he considered this particular assemblage as a way of helping people compose. So the marks were being mapped to sound, but the primary purpose of this this assemblage was to compose. Something similar is a Canadian artist, David Rockerby. Again, he worked with computers. He worked in the 80s. He started on this. And it's a assemblage in which his own movement is caught on video. And the way the video's frames change, it actually creates sound. Again, a way of creating sound out of the performance. And something quite similar at the McGill, they have a school that, a department that all they do is they create instruments. And this, in this case, it was a machine to create sound for performances for people who use a laptop on stage. And then there was something like this, Captain Kangaroo. So it was a children's program. He made this marks. The marks went whoop, 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 whoop. Right? It was very much, it was this that we wanted to make in some ways. The kind of vision was to make something that would have the same kind of effect, where you can actually see the drawing make the sound. So we made an assemblage of all sorts of things, and we stopped research, because there's lots to think about how sound maps to, how marks map to sound and all this, but we stopped and made some pieces. Our first piece is called Objects on a Table. Actually, it was the third piece, but the reason I put it first is that we kind of circled around it before it found the title. And it's a structured improvisation. It's basically a bunch of still lives and kind of a theme and variations. And in this particular performance, we concentrated on drawing gestures. And it was conceived very much like as an homage to an Italian painter, Giorgio Morandi. Giorgio Morandi had a very, very kind of limited repertoire of marks that he made. He had some hatching, some very slow contours, and sometimes a faster contour, and those became for us the prototype for the machine. And it's now that I like to try something. Okay. So can we have the phone open again, close, please? That will show you how this works. Okay. So what I've done here is put down a few objects. And the sound comes from a percussionist with whom I worked briefly, and his kind of sounds were good generic drawing sounds. What we have is a slow contour sound. Then what we call a fast. And then we have a hacking sound. And then what we call the zigzag. And this is how it goes. these are a few objects with this kind of sound. The thing is that the piece started off as a piece that I did with a bass clarinet player. In fact, I can do this piece with a sound, and with a phonopen, I can go and play the piece with another sound. So the sounds that we have from the clarinet are somewhat like this.
Thank you.
So one can go on like this for quite a while. The challenge for us in this particular piece was to actually discover the meaning of the orchestration. Why certain sounds rather than others? Why the bass clarinet, for example? And when we stopped to make pieces with a euphonopan, was exactly to go not only developing a piece of equipment, but also think of drawing this performance in a deeper way. So one of the things that we eventually did is we actually took some of the objects that I was drawing and we coaxed sounds out of them rather than the bass clarinet. Now the bass clarinet initially was somewhat arbitrary. It was the person who was actually very, very good, bass clarinetist Catherine Adanu, who is one of the great improvisers any place. She was very good at reading the drawing as a graphic score. So when I do this piece with her, she actually looks at the marks I make and she kind of follows it. And she improvises with a bass clarinet that I am sampling. She also works with a percussionist who actually helped us coax the sound of the objects themselves, which is also a way of actually addressing the content of the piece. Now, our next piece is called Mirror. And Mirror is a piece for soprano and euphonopan, which is structured very much on the premise of a life drawing class. So the life drawing class has a certain ritual to it. There's a model who comes, gets on a stand. We do some fast drawings of her, then some slow drawings, and we finally settle into a fairly lengthy pose. So the mirror piece is very much structured like this particular ritual that people who draw undergo every week. And what's interesting, I called it mirror, partially because the soprano sees her own image evolving, but she also sees her voice reflected, because it is her voice that's sampled that the euphonopan manipulates. So it's a double kind of mirroring that she is undergoing. The other reason I discovered after I actually had made a piece, there's something that we call a mirror neuron, which is actually responsible for that kind of kinetic resonance that I was talking about. So in some ways, the piece refers to all those kind of things. The third piece we made is called Signature. It came out of the experience, experimenting with the euphonopan. When we gave it to people who do not draw habitually, the big question was always, so what shall I draw? And what happened is when we gave it to people who didn't draw, well, sometimes they did draw things. For example, the other day I showed it to the whole thing to someone, and a person draw Homer Simpson. But quite often, it becomes an instrument like like the one I talked about, that becomes a machine of making sound. There is an area, though, where people who do not draw actually get quite absorbed in the mark making, and that is in writing. So the logic of the mark making in writing totally takes over. And it's especially when people write their own names that the logic takes over. I wanted to create a piece that actually got ordinary people using the UFonopen. And we made a piece called Signature, which in which the composer I was working with at this time, Nick Soring, suggested that we also use an improvisational choir. So the way we are working now is that a person signs their name. It is actually when the name is played back, they're actually creating a tune. And each person gets basically an individualized tune. But we also take the person's name as recorded. So when the whole thing is playing back, you actually hear the name being modulated to that particular tune. Moreover, the choir takes the name and processes it, plays with it, and a bunch of other names. So it plays very much with the idea of the person being an individual with a name, but also being part of a collective where the choir comes in place, and where we're creating the soundscape of name and signature. So it's basically here where the project now lays, but in the future, we plan to look and write up some of these experiments, because that's, in fact, what our performances are, and to analyze exactly what we found out and take it further. Right now, the kind of gestures, the machine reacts quite well to the marks in modulating the sound, but I would like to actually kind of have it react even in finer way. So at one point, I kind of was the Turk in the machine and actually acted as a gesture recognition for somebody else who drew. It was very hard. It was hard for me who actually know what those gestures are, whereas for a computer it would be even harder. So we are thinking that the next step is going to be approaching, collecting data from people who draw and people who play. So the people who draw would actually, we'd start with a bunch of musicians who will interpret performances of drawing, and those will break down those performances and then approach the data from the other end by having drawers interpret bits of sound that actually correspond to gestures. And this way we kind of squeeze together in getting to a point where the sound can be processed much more objectively according to the drawing, the marks the person makes on the screen. So it's here that the project is resting now. And if I would like to open it up to any questions you might have. And the way we structured this is that we allowed enough time that if people want to come up and play and start creating a piece and start talking about their own practice and their own practice of mark making. For me, it was quite interesting. And when Suzanne first approached me about this talk, I said, you know, what's interesting about perimeters? There's equations everywhere. Is that you look and people have written equation, diagrams. She wondered whether this whole assemblage could be used somehow to approach these equations. And even kind of tentatively, could we make a piece for today? The thing is, there's a certain meaning that is not entirely arbitrary. If we actually put some music for the equations, it would be perhaps uninteresting. I think people have to think very much about how they use the writing, both privately and publicly. Especially on the blackboard, I suspect that most often writing on a blackboard is a bit of a performance in itself. And thinking about the kind of gestures and the kind of rhetoric that is behind making those marks is really would be at the root of making any kind of piece that involves the kind of writing that you do. What I was really interested about the equations and all this that I see all over the place, I thought, what's interesting here is, what are the rituals again around erasing? One does, I can understand very much when somebody would actually pick up a chalk and explain something to somebody else, or even work out a thought, but what are the rituals around erasing? I think that's an interesting thought. And I'll leave it there, and it's open to questions. Anybody? Yes?
It just kind of reminds me of, are you aware of that there's a musician called Beardy Man, and he has this machine that he's built to do like sampling and sounds, and it's kind of a series of iPads, and he like touches them and does all kinds of different things.
Yes.
I was wondering, are you aware of him, you know that work?
I don't know him, but I'd very much like to know more about him. So
he's given a TED talk, so.
Okay.
This just kind of reminds me of that, like, playing the sound.
Yes, and what did the images look like?
He has different people to make images, so he doesn't produce images,
mm-hmm.
but he has like a group of people who make graphics behind him on the projector that kind of.
Okay, so they react to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
At this point of view, at the development of this kind of system, do you know any particular kind of drawing that sounds really melodic? Or meaningful?
Yes. In fact, a very slow drawing can sound very melodic. If the sample you use is very melodic, when you make a slow drawing, it actually sounds very, very melodic.
Do you have any samples?
I do have the clarinet sample, I think. let me think. I think the clarinet sample is probably the best one. So it's this sample here. What you hear here are two tunes superimposed. We're actually varying the tune, the pitch, both with the y-axis and with the x-axis. And sometimes when we just tune off the x-axis, the whole mark becomes very melodic. Okay? Yes? No, it actually varies with the speed a lot. So if you have a sample, that's a tune. If I draw faster, the tune is being played faster.
Yeah, I mean, you draw with same speed, the same strength, but at different
times. Yes, it does change. Because right now, it also changes with whether you're on the left side of the drawing or on the right side of the line. As a matter of fact, if you sit in the middle, you can hear it. It's also specialized. You can hear it in one speaker or in the other speaker. Okay?
Yeah, we have there's a vast area of possibility. One area that.
Oh, by the way, this is Klaus, who is the machine designer for this.
Yeah. One area is trying to. Well, map sort of implies a correspondence, which is probably not real, because the drawing, the gesture, has its own phrases, and its own structure, and so does music. And one of my own interests is finding not only mapping points and geometries, but mapping patterns. And there's an IRCAM in France where it's a Center for Modern Music, there's been a lot of work done in pattern recognition in music and predicting things that follow. A good candidate, somewhere on our to-do list, I don't know where, is neural networks, because you can find patterns and you can also apply rules. It's just one of many possibilities.
Yes, one of the, yes, please.
Have you considered putting memory effects in the sense that the music is not only reflecting the current movement of your hand, but also it's building up on the existing lines and geometry?
You mean a certain kind of layering? Is this what you're meaning?
Or you know, that the history of the whole piece is important. It's not only what you're drawing at that instant or in those around those seconds, but the accumulated history.
Yes, one of the things I thought about doing is what happens when a line crosses, is being crossed, right? Because when a line crosses another, it's already a layering. And one of those things is on our the things that I would like to investigate. And one way of dealing it, the way some other instruments makers deal with it, is that they actually loop a sound around the crossing, if a line crosses itself, right? If it just crosses it, one line crossing another, it just sends a sound particle down the line. So those are kind of possibilities. But what I wanted to also add here is there's a feedback happening. When people draw, they do listen to themselves. And for example, if somebody has a scratchy pen, and they irritate themselves. You can actually see this in the drawing becoming very tight. But if you actually put some kind of sound, and the person actually hears and starts listening to the drawing, what happens is that the drawing changes. So the drawing somehow ends up in this kind of space between sound and drawing, between the sound marks and graphic marks. And it's kind of interesting what happens, because it does remove a certain degree of freedom than somebody who does a drawing privately, purely for themselves. And it's actually one of the things that we are kind of researching is what happens with this kind of feedback. How does the drawing change with the sound that you're actually producing? Never mind with the sound that somebody else produces. Another origin of this particular piece is that I had asked a composer whether he would like to compose some music for this kind of very ritualized live drawing sessions. What he said to me is, just get yourself a playing list. And, yes, true. But I knew that. That's exactly why I want the music composed, is that people do react to sound. So it influences the rhythm of the mark making, the kind of music they're listening to. There's terrible music for drawing to. It's surprising. I don't know if any of you know music for airplanes. It's music composed kind of as a soundscape. And it's terrible for drawing. People just cannot deal with it. Whereas something that is quite rhythmic works, and something that is quite melodic also works. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with. Any more questions? Yes, Carlos?
We do a lot of scribbling as physicists on the blackboard. There was one instance where there's a connection. The one where you say that when you were in the museum, and then you scribble, the part of why you scribble is to look better, with more attention to what you're doing.
Yes.
In some sense, this is part of why we write equations. There's something you're looking at,
yes.
I'm not sure what it is. And if we didn't have equations to write and play with, we just lose the sight of that thing. So the scribbling there is partly sometimes we get somewhere, but it's just that we spend a lot of time. So there's a scribbling aspect of this, whatever equations we write. There's a linear aspect, meaningful, but I think there's also this aspect of kind of staring at the thing you're trying to capture.
Yes. Anybody learning stuff by heart? Did you ever try writing things out? It really, if you work in theater, if you ever had to memorize something, writing it down actually helps memorizing it, because it's another way that the memory is formed in your body. So I think in some ways, when you write equations, first of all, it slows you down. When you read like this. And in most presentations and kind of teachings, you could just hand out the notes, right? But
I was talking more about trying to look at something you cannot see, right? Which is because there is a process about, you know, trying to unfold that.
Okay, can you elaborate? I'm not sure that I understand your thought then.
Okay.
I remember some while back getting into a number of people in a very animated argument, and everyone was standing in front of the chalkboard. And they were articulating their arguments with the charts and diagrams and that. And then it came to nothing. And somebody erased the chalkboard with politeness, and everybody turned around and walked away. And then somebody said, but. And the group went back to the chalkboard, and they stood around it, staring at it, and pointing to the empty chalkboard. And yes. This went on for a very long time. So the writing is a way of implanting things. It's a very visceral or organic, and that's another kind of visualization. It's in the gesture. It's not in the eyes or the mark or the symbol. A lot of that goes on with this. Drawing as well, I believe. When the musicians are performing, there's some very, very complicated things going on. Because the musicians see the drawing, they both see the drawing, both hear the drawing. It's a very unique kind of experience.
Anybody else?
No, it's yes. Okay. Coming back to the idea of the history of the drawing, a technical idea could be to do a Fourier transform of the drawing on real time. You could do it, analyze the frequencies that appear there, and based on that, trying to, apart from the sound you make, the line that you're currently tracing, add a background track that is responsive to how the frequencies of the drawing, as it gets more complicated, evolve. I don't know if that's basically more how to put into.
Well, keep the idea. We'll jot it down and try it. All of that.
Yeah, the sound that you hear, everything is processed in frequency domain.
Yeah.
Because I can actually understand it. I'm not a musician, so I can anticipate what a transform looks like. I can't imagine what a sound is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. So.